The presidential motorcade had just passed through heavy crowds in downtown Dallas.
Destroying the media lies and dismantling the narratives. One story at a time. It's the Adrian Slade Show.
The people took to the streets, burning and tipping over cars, collapsing building canopies, rioting in humongous crowds. No, this wasn't the Iranian protest, which are still happening, regardless of what the press is not reporting. This was the city of Philadelphia. It already looks like it's been burnt to a cinder, but it was burning in full-on frenzy mode.
There are several dead people. I can see a man jump from the White House and land on his head. He's unconscious.
You got people climbing on the roof on the northeast corner of Locust. They're climbing on all the light poles. Where's the footy cops that are supposed to be out there on that corner? Northeast corner of Broad and Locust. They're climbing up the fire escape onto the roof of the building.
Cause they're breaking the light poles off. It's going to fall onto the ground. The peace policy, that light post is going to come down.
And they weren't rioting over, you know, the polarizing Justin Timberlake performance of a halftime show filled with so-called demonic images of Prince and Tom Landry hats, which I didn't think was all that awful of a performance. I don't know about you. I mean, I'm not a Justin Timberlake fan. I mean, if I had it my way, sludge desert rock pioneers Caius would reunite and perform Sky Valley in its entirety for the halftime Super Bowl show. And there would be no demonic images of dead musicians because Caius would have broke out the demon cleaner halfway through the show. And I joke about the demonic images because apparently Prince stated years ago that he would never perform with a hologram because he thought it would be demonic. And Justin Timberlake exhumed Prince's likeness for a duet and to paint the town purple. Nope, the city of Philadelphia was on fire because the Eagles were on fire. Most notably, Nick Foles, a third-stringer quarterback who had his chance to shine. Someone who was going to quit football altogether. He stuck it out and went on to take the Eagles to the first-ever Super Bowl win, 41-33, against the modern dynasty of the New England Patriots. Now, I know you don't tune in to me for my analysis of sports or even football, but what I do comment on was arguably largely not present in the game for once, for the first time in a long time, and that is politics. My wife and I were sitting around going, wow, this is actually a good game. We can enjoy it with our kids. We aren't being preached to by, you know, 84 Lumber. You know, or we didn't have some activist awareness message being beamed in our face. And outside of what we thought was Pink taking gum out of her mouth before her rendition of the national anthem, which I was immediately corrected on Twitter as being a lozenge because she was getting over the flu, which I was unaware of because I didn't consult my TMZ briefing on the health of pop stars lately. Yeah, everybody let me know that was a lozenge. Thank you very little, lozenge Twitter. But outside of that, it was pretty largely enjoyable. And I think the American people have spoken and won. For now, that is. Because progressivism never dies. The infection is always there. All you can do is suppress it. Because as long as somebody has that utopian worldview that believes the right mixture of benevolent, uncorrupted leadership will finally get things right and implement it the right way, it's never going to go away. I mean, and then, you know, we have to look like the bigots because we look to natural rights and the defense of freedom that we continually have to defend every single day. Because if you don't, they will slip in and take it away. That's largely been what the modern left does. It's always on the hunt. It's always on the go. Progressivism always creeping in, and we have to continually smack it down like whack-a-mole. But, you know, the media, they're still going to find a way to inject it into this game somehow. That's why Daniel Jose Camacho from The Guardian News posted a picture of Tom Brady with his head down saying, "White supremacy realizes it's not invincible." Seriously? How did you get that out of that? To which people blasted him online. Toxic Masculinity tweeted, "When you're so proud of your stupidity that you have to put it on display for the whole world to see." John Lemon Squeezy said, "Are you 12? And my buddy James in Louisiana, at NerfHerder36, he posted, "Wow, such white supremacist the Patriots are. I mean, not one minority player on the team is, you know, 100% white guys. How stupid are you? And he put pictures of all the team members on the Patriots that were of minority descent. But they will find a way to, you know, inject it in. And if, you know, if national security documents for the Super Bowl weren't left on a plane and thankfully found by those stalwarts of the media, like CNN, maybe Philadelphia could have been saved. Maybe it wouldn't be burning to the ground. That's right, you heard me right. Super Bowl national security documents were left on a plane and found by CNN. The Department of Homeland Security documents critiquing the response to a simulated anthrax attack on Super Bowl Sunday were marked for official use only and important for national security. Recipients of the draft after action reports were told to keep them locked up after business hours and to shred them prior to discarding. They were admonished not to share their contents with anyone who lacked, quote, an operational need to know. But security surrounding the December 2017 report suffered an embarrassing breach when CNN, an employee from CNN actually, discovered copies of them, along with other sensitive DHS material, in the backseat pocket of a commercial plane. The reports were accompanied by the travel itinerary and boarding pass of the government scientist in charge of BioWatch, the DHS program that conducted the anthrax drills in preparation for Super Bowl 52 in Minneapolis. Sensitive DH documents, probably hanging out with an abused copy of SkyMall in the seat pocket for all to see. Your government at work. But let me go on with the story. The reports are based on exercises designed to evaluate the ability of public health, law enforcement, and emergency management officials to engage in a coordinated response were a biological attack be carried out in Minneapolis on Super Bowl Sunday. The exercises identified several areas for improvement, including the problem that some local law enforcement and emergency management agencies possess only a cursory knowledge of the BioWatch program and its mission. CNN decided to withhold publication of this article until after the Super Bowl, after government officials voiced concerns that publishing it prior to the game could jeopardize security for the event. A DHS official told CNN that areas for improvement identified in the draft report has been addressed prior to Sunday's game, and that the agency had great confidence in its preparedness. Quote, this exercise was a resounding success and was not conducted in any response to any specific credible threat of bioterrorism. Juliet Kamen, a former DHS official who now serves as a CNN contributor, said it was not surprising that the documents highlighted deficiencies. She said such exercises are designed to expose gaps in planning and preparedness so that authorities are, quote, better equipped if something bad were to happen. Nonetheless, the misplacement of the documents was a really stupid thing. Who knows who else could have picked this up? The biggest consequence of this mistake, she said, may have less to do with the terrorists knowing our vulnerabilities and more to do with the confidence in the Department of Homeland Security. In the end, confidence in the federal government at a time of crisis is what the American public deserves. Man, we have lost confidence in that. Confidence has just been destroyed by the previous administration. You know, these same people, these CNN people that are out there complaining about, oh, Donald Trump was attacking the media. We got the, you know, the First Amendment protects the press, and we got to sit there and listen to them get all sanctimonious about how the president is attacking him and how he's attacking, you know, their institutions. He's not weaponizing anybody against it. He's weaponizing his Twitter against it. Whoop-de-freaking-do. He's not going out and saying, hey, I'm going to get the IRS to go after your Tea Party group or your pro-Israel group. I mean, President Trump isn't weaponizing the NSA, allowing fraudulent information or maybe even omitted biases and relationships that would show bias to obtain warrants to wiretap political enemies. He's not getting the EPA to attack you and dump, you know, poisonous chemicals into the Amonis River or shutting down the Gibson Guitar Company because of the fact that they might have a different political viewpoint. He's not giving weapons to drug cartels across the border in Mexico just so he can cause an uproar of, you know, outcries of gun control and things of that nature and put people's lives at risk or even have lives lost because of it. So these same CNN people want to complain about that, but we're looking at the fact that there is no confidence in the federal government anymore. There's no confidence in the media anymore. And the fact that your government is dumb enough to leave documents that show the vulnerabilities to one of the largest events in America that could have massive casualties, more so than even the World Trade Center attack. And the fact that we can't even go with the confidence that maybe CNN was given these documents, since they have such close running circles with people in Department of Homeland Security, is just, it's unbelievable. Back in a moment.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
Welcome back. So let's talk a little bit more about that confidence in government that we're supposed to have. Let's talk more about that confidence in media. So how are you celebrating the internal intelligence coup? I mean, you having a good time with this? I'm celebrating by arguing with progressive leftists who are, they're more than fine with the intelligence community spying on anyone and everyone, even after they complained about the Patriot Act under George W. Bush. That's great. I'm enjoying watching the praise for the federal arm of law enforcement by those who called local law enforcement pigs and minority killers, you know, Black Lives Matter. Now it's like, oh, we got to uphold, you know, the rule of law. Really? The rule of law that Obama shat on for like 8 years? You know, the same rule of law that Bill Clinton decimated during his term? Not to say that George W. Bush was all that great, but he did at least try to respect the law, respect the Constitution at some degree, even though he wasn't a true conservative. That's why I put that little compassionate on there. You know, we're going to be progressive conservative, which makes absolutely no sense. But anyways, you know, they're lifting up they're lifting the intelligence community up on a pedestal. You know, they're saying, oh, well, these people are, you know, they're patriots. They're good people. Not all of them are bad. Many of them love this great country. And, you know, the CIA and the NSA and the FBI, they're great institutions. Never mind the fact that they were, you know, calling them the causation for illegal wars. And, oh, imperial regime change caused by the CIA in the Middle East and the NSA. And all of a sudden, these people love them now. You know, this entire situation that we're seeing in the news is a simple case of Obama-Clinton abuse of power, weaponizing the intelligence community against a legitimately elected president they deem as unfit. I call that an internal coup. I don't know about you. And you know, I've done some deep dives in the past. I mean, we did a whole two-part series on the war in Syria and got into the nuts and bolts. We did a whole breakdown behind who was behind Black Lives Matter, who was behind Antifa. But this situation with the memo and the illegal spying and Uranium One and all that, and we did some of that. We've touched on Dennis Montgomery's testimony, or actually his representative, Tim Blixeth, providing an account of his testimony of his time in the NSA and how he was able to, or how the NSA was able to spy on everybody. We took apart the narrative that was being built on Donald Trump with his Russian business dealings in the past and, you know, those surrounding him having Russian, you know, affiliations, which we'll get into. You know, Carter Page, we talked about. Paul Manafort, why did those people suddenly just show up in Donald Trump's orbit for a season only to get canned? Because it'd be really easy to build a Russian narrative on the backs of those associations. Oh, well, Paul Manafort, he helped people, you know, help the leader of Ukraine. And he was an advisor to him. I mean, Carter Page. Oh, I do Russian business deals all the time. So, you know, when you look at that, we have to look at the fact that this situation is so fluid. I haven't wanted to touch it. I feel like I wouldn't be doing you guys a good enough service as listeners to listen to me ramble on about something that the next day is going to have some new revelation that's going to pop up and totally turn the story on its head. You know, the story now has changed to, oh, well, you know, not only does Adam Schiff have a memo, well, there's a bunch of us that have memos. Devin Nunes has 5 memos. Oh, wait a minute, there's a second dossier. What? You know, I'm not going to get into the nuts and bolts of this because, first off, there are more ground-level people with their ear to the ground than I can be because I don't have the resources to obtain the information that they're obtaining that are covering this at better, more thorough angles. You know, I can provide my assessment of it, which I'm hoping you guys respect, but at the same time, I feel like I'm going to be leaving out pertinent things that I may not have access to. So I've been leaving this story alone, but I have covered the memo because it was something everyone was provided. Everyone was allowed to read it. I was able to give, based on my knowledge of what's going on with this story, because I have been following it very closely. I just haven't wanted to cover it in a definitive way. I was able to provide my analysis of it. And you can listen to that. It's an extra Adrian Slade Show quick rant that we did on Saturday. You can hear it on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, Spreaker, iHeart, TuneIn app. But, you know, these things were supposed to originally be classified because they were supposedly a threat to national security. Remember, the left was going, these things are, you know, detrimental to national security. And then when it came out, yeah, it was nothing but a nothing burger, right? These same people that were propping up Chelsea Manning, who was giving out intel that compromised our military missions, and treasonous defectors like Bo Bergdahl, are suddenly going, oh, we can't let this get out. It's going to be a threat to national security. And then they come out and they say, oh, yeah, that's just a nothing burger. I mean, listen to these people.
We remember the big nothing burger of Geraldo and Al Capone's safe.
To call it a nothing burger is probably to elevate it more than it deserves. It is just a nothing, nothing, nothing.
The memo, a great big nothing burger.
Really just more of a nothing burger.
A nothing burger.
This memo as a nothing burger.
It has been called a nothing burger.
The technical term is a nothing burger.
It's pretty much a nothing burger.
Or is it a nothing burger?
I wouldn't say it's a nothing burger, more of a White Castle slider.
The threat to national security that is a nothing burger, that didn't really have any names, didn't have any national security information listed with it. It's now just a nothing burger. And not only that, like I said, they've decided to muddy the waters with a Cloward and Piven style by flooding memos all over the place. We're going to release Adam Schiff's memo, and we're going to release, which actually the Republicans voted unanimously along with the Democrats to release Adam Schiff's memo. And we know now we have more dossiers too. We got almost more dossiers than we do memos. I mean, they're neck and neck, but they're complaining that the GOP is trying to stifle the Schiff's memo release. But, you know, it's actually going through the same exact process that Nunes's did, which was funny because I got into it with Kyle Cheney. He's a congressional reporter for Politico the other day, because Byron York had a tweet towards an article that he posted saying House Intel Republicans have a written report on Trump dossier, FISA abuse classified, but now available for all House members to read, could be a first step forward. To which he said the House can't vote to declassify things. They can vote to release information in breach of its classified nature if they deem it important enough to reveal. Well, that's when I was basically saying, actually, they can. Each House, each chamber, Senate, House, even Donald Trump can independently release intelligence, you know, that's considered classified. They just all have to go through a process, with the exception of Donald Trump. He can do it just out of the blue. But each House has rules by which its respective intelligence committees can initiate disclosure of classified information, and with the approval of the full House or Senate, it can be released over the president's objections. I mean, he's not wrong here. If a member of the House Intelligence Committee requests a vote to declassify, the committee must meet within 5 days to vote on it. That's where we are right now with Schiff. That's where we are. Remember that long period of time? It's like hashtag release the memo over and over. And then all of a sudden there was this long break because that was the 5 days that it took for, you know, the committee to meet, and they revet it, and then they get it over to the president, and then the president can approve it or not. And then if after 5 days president has objected in writing to certify it, that it could be a threat to the national interest of the U.S. posed by such disclosure is of such gravity that it outweighs the public interest in the disclosure, the committee can proceed. And if the president does object, the matter may be referred to the full House for a vote by a majority vote of the Senate Intelligence Committee. So that's how it works. That's where we are right now. And let's remember about what happened when Nunes went into the White House. A lot of people are still going back to that. You know, Jake Tapper did the other day. complaining, well, why was Devin Nunes at the White House? Well, apparently, they used the White House to set up and establish a secure location that the NSA could not listen in on. And, you know, of course, Mike Rogers went to Trump and said, hey, you got something going on. And Mike Rogers was working in the CIA, and he informed Trump, who immediately took his entire nominations process. Remember we talked about, you know, the golden labradoodle that was showing up in the lobby of Trump Tower hoping for a gig? You know, Dan Quayle, he's going to be the potato czar. And we talked about all these people that were coming through. Kanye West is going to get on the golden escalator. Everybody's coming through like it's a Hollywood casting call for Trump's cabinet. And that just suddenly ended. Everybody's gone. Well, that's kind of what caused it. Mike Rogers said, you're being bugged, buddy. You need to move. So he took it over to New Jersey. And Nunes, knowing that that was the case, decided, I want to review these documents, and did so in the White House, and then came out with that pissed off, livid impromptu at the press conference. You know, we really have to separate ourselves and our interest, you know, and our biases from this situation. Because there's many, I mean, the progressives have just caught, oh, it's no big deal. You know, never mind Patriot Act, never mind privacy, never mind the fact that if the shoe was on the other foot, you'd be having a freaking conniption. But many of those who are never Trumpers are just as bad. They think that, you know, Donald Trump's just being mean to the intelligence community. I mean, the left and the never Trumpers have turned Donald Trump into a caricature. And arguably, I can even say the MAGA crowd has too, in a different kind of way. But they have turned Donald Trump into this caricature of, you know, reality TV president, bumbling, stumbling. We can all beat up on him. And that doesn't mean I'm trying to take up for him. Obviously, I didn't vote for him. But, you know, they're not even taking his U.S. citizenship and his eligibility to run for public office into question. They're not saying, well, if it wasn't Orange Julius Caesar and we removed him from the equation and you put somebody else in there, would you be happy that this was happening? I mean, I'm looking at the horrid precedents this all sets, not who was involved. I've removed Donald Trump's persona from the equation when looking at all this, and it makes it a hell of a lot more scarier. So I just want you to know that this is where we are. You know, we're supposed to have confidence, you know, in Department of Homeland Security, who's going to leave a document on an airplane about Super Bowl security. And then at the same time, turn around and go, oh, yeah, you know, FBI, they're great. These bureaucracies are great. They're institutions that have been around since 1908. And we're supposed to hold them up as though, you know, they're revered and that they're never beyond reproach. But then the limited government side kicks in and goes, this is why we have limited government. I mean, yes, we need an FBI. Yes, we probably need an NSA to some extent. But do we need a Department of Homeland Security? We have an FBI. We have, you know, Central Intelligence. We have the National Guard. Do we really need the TSA? When if a private business was handling their own security, they would probably do a heck of a better job because of how it would reflect upon the security and the value and what you would, you know, the marketing behind whether or not your business would survive. So we're left with these institutions that we're supposed to have confidence in, and we're supposed to worry that they're never going to be tainted. And when you know about Bill Clinton and Waco and Elian Gonzalez down the line, and you know about Obama and IRS and EPA and Fast and Furious and Benghazi and everything else down the line, did you think this wasn't going to happen at some point? Back in a second.
This is Adrian Slade.
Welcome back as we breathlessly await the memo from Adam Schiff, because it's going to be amazing. I mean, Adam Schiff, his memo is going to be more stellar than Nunes's or even Grassley's, because, you know, it's Adam Schiff. I mean, he's the guy who got tricked by Russian comedians to get information on Trump hooking up with female models.
Hi. All right. I'm going to put Mr. Schiff on phone, and then I guess are you going to transfer him to Mr. Parubi?
Yes, of course.
Great. Thank you.
Hi. How are you?
Hello, Mr. Schiff. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you.
I know that you work for investigation regarding Trump and Russian government.
Yes.
Could I explain you where we are?
Yes, of course. But, you know, again, I would just caution that our Russian friends may be listening to the conversation, so I wouldn't share anything over the phone that you don't want them to hear.
No, I don't think that it will impact on our investigation.
Yes. Well, please, go ahead then.
In November 2013, Mr. Trump visited Moscow. He visited a competition Miss Universe, and there he met with Russian journalist and celebrity Ksenia Sobchak.
I'm sorry, can you explain that again? While he was in Moscow in November 2013, he met with a journalist and
Well, she's poor journalist, but anyway, she became famous because of Putin is her godfather.
Okay, Putin is a godfather. Okay.
She's also known as a person who provides girls for escort for oligarchs, and she met with Trump and she brought him one our Russian girl, celebrity Olga Buzova, who also known as a person with a strange reputation.
Olga, and how do you spell her name?
Olga Buzova.
Buzova. So
yes.
Olga Buzova is a friend of the reporter Sovchek?
Yes, she's a friend of a reporter and I think the special agent of Russian Secret Service, Ksenia Sobchak.
That Sobchak is or Olga is?
No, Sobchak is Ksenia.
Okay, and so Buzova met with Trump in New York at some point after the 2013 Miss Universe
yes.
pageant.
Absolutely, and she got compromising materials on Trump after their short relations.
Okay, and what's the nature of the compromise?
Well, there were pictures of naked Trump.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. Adam Schiff, the same guy who actually, as a DOJ prosecutor, was accused of covering up evidence to help prosecute FBI agents in a shady Russian spy case. From True Pundit, let's travel back to 1990 when Adam Schiff was working as a federal prosecutor for the Justice Department, who was hell-bent on prosecuting an FBI agent for espionage, which by today's standards would look like a weak shoplifting case. Schiff was chasing FBI agent Richard Miller for trading a secret FBI manual to the Soviet Union for sex, money, and a Burberry trench coat. Yep, that's it. Imagine those headlines. Miller's case wouldn't even get a sniff in the Andrew McCabe era. After three or four trials and a mistrial and an overturned verdict on appeal, Schiff finally got Miller locked up, but the case went sideways and Schiff was accused of covering up evidence that could have helped Miller. Such allegations from defense attorneys representing the Justice Department employee against federal prosecutors are rarely taken lightly. And from what we know about Schiff's propensity to leak classified intelligence, perhaps the details of this case should have been reexamined. The FBI's Miller has been long free from prison. Yet Schiff perseveres. What did Miller know about Russia or the FBI's dealings with Russia that made the Bureau want to silence him? And why would Schiff and the Justice Department allegedly cover up evidence to put Miller away on Mickey Mouse charges of trading an FBI manual for sex in a trench coat? This leads to roots in the deep state in the 1980s and 1990s with young Schiff at the proportional controls. He surely is no new player here. So we know that this guy has a shady background, but yet his memo is going to be the memo to debunk it all. When if you think about the Grassley memo, which we got just the other day, kind of supports Devin Nunes's memo. It's a little more detailed, has more sourcing, more citations. You know, it's kind of redacted, though. Here's what the Grassley memo states. Christopher Steele gathered information from Russian government sources, according to the law firm Perkins Coie. Steele's dossier-related efforts were funded through Fusion GPS and paid for by that law firm on behalf of the DNC and the Clinton campaign. This is the same law firm that partner Judith Corley initiated the process to obtain Obama's birth certificate back in 2011. It's also the same law firm that recently received payments from Obama for America. I wonder what Obama knows about all this. The Judiciary Committee began raising a series of questions to the FBI and the Justice Department as a part of the committee's constitutional oversight's responsibility. The FBI provided the committee access to the classified documents relevant to the FBI's relationship with Steele, And if they relied on his dossier work, it appears that either Steele lied to the FBI or the British court, or the documents contain materially false statements. Now, keep in mind, Christopher Steele was a no-show just the other day to a long-requested deposition in London, according to Fox News. That doesn't help him. Chairman and ranking member of the committee received a briefing by James Comey on March 15, 2017. The chairman was provided two copies relevant for FISA applications, which request authority to conduct surveillance on Carter Page. Now, keep in mind, in 2013, Carter Page was working as an undercover employee for the FBI, helping them build a case against Evgeny Baryshnikov. In March 2016, Carter remained their informant, pretrial leading to the pleading guilty from Baryshnikov. He was also being courted by Russia to be a spy, but they thought this guy is an idiot, so they kind of passed on him. So Carter Page, you know, the guy who was in the Trump administration up until September, who was an undercover FBI employee that was courted by the Russians to be a spy before that. Well, the FBI filed its first warrant for Carter Page on October 26, 2016. So he's no longer in the administration? So how are they going to use that to listen to the goings-on of the administration? Have no idea. Because Carter Page wouldn't have been there. So they used that as the crux of the basis to listen in on the Trump transition team and his campaign. I mean, it's unbelievable. But the application contains no additional information corroborating the dossier allegations against Carter Page. It cited a news article that appears to be sourced to Steele's dossier as well. Remember, Steele was the one who was leaking the information to the news sources to corroborate his dossier to get the warrant. That according to the Nunes memo. Going on, FBI discussed the reliability of this unverified information in footnotes 8 and 18 of the FISA application. The FBI noted, to a vaguely limited extent, the political origins of the dossier. Footnote 8 stated that the dossier information was compiled pursuant to the direction of the law firm who had hired an, quote, identified U.S. person. Now, they didn't tell you who that person was, but it's been found out that Glenn Simpson of Fusion GPS is who that was. The application failed to disclose the identities of Glenn Simpson, DNC, and the Clinton campaign, all who gave the research over and all who paid Steele through Perkins Coie, the law firm. FBI stated to the FISA court that based on Steele's previous reporting history with the FBI, Steele provided reliable information and believes his reporting to be credible. Now, what's amazing to me is how you were able to obtain a FISA warrant to wiretap based on, you know, your stellar reputation. You know, you've got a good name for yourself. Never mind the fact that you probably need hard evidence. Now, the FISA applications note the existence of the news article dated September 23rd, 2016. That's the one we talked about in the Nunes memo. In particular, contains some of the same dossier information about Mr. Page compiled by Mr. Steele and on which the FBI relied its application. While not explicitly stating this, this is presumably the article by Michael Isikoff of Yahoo News titled U.S. Intel Officials Probe Ties Between Trump Advisor and Kremlin. Now, we're going to pick up the rest of this Grassley memo in the Memo Wars of 2018 on the other side of the break. Stick with me.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
Welcome back. So we've been talking about how the Grassley memo corroborates the Nunes memo while we eagerly await that Adam Schiff memo, which, based on his reputation and recent activity, I don't know how that one's going to be. I think it's just there to muddy the waters. So we were picking it up where the FISA court was using the dossier and using the Yahoo News article entitled U.S. Intel Officials Probe Ties Between Trump Advisor and Kremlin going back to September 23rd, 2016 to obtain a FISA warrant based on shoddy evidence paid for by the DNC, paid for by Fusion GPS, paid for by the Hillary Clinton campaign, in order to spy on Carter Page in October of 2016 when he was already out of the administration, and somehow that was used to listen in on the Trump campaign transition team and administration. Yeah, nothing wrong there. The application attempts to explain away the inconsistency between Mr. Steele's assertion to the FBI and the existence of the article, apparently to shield Mr. Steele's credibility, on which it still relied for some renewal requests. The application to the FISA court said, given that the information contained on September 23rd news article generally matches the information about Page that Steele discovered doing his research, because, you know, he's got that stellar reputation that he's basing his ability to get the FISA warrant from, the FBI does not believe that Steele directly provided this information to the press, although he did. In footnote 9 of its January 2017 application to renew the FISA warrant for Mr. Page, the FBI again addressed Mr. Steele's credibility. At the time, the FBI noted that it had suspended its relationship with Mr. Steele in October 2016 because of Steele's unauthorized disclosure of information to the press. The FBI relayed that Steele had been bothered by the FBI's notification to Congress in October 2016 about the reopening of the Clinton investigation, and as a result, Steele's independently and against prior admonishment from the FBI to speak only with the FBI on this matter, released the reporting discussed herein, dossier allegations against Page, to an identified news organization. However, the FBI continued to cite Mr. Steele's past work as evidence of his reliability and stated that the incident that led to the FBI suspending its relationship with Mr. Steele occurred after Mr. Steele provided the FBI the dossier information described in the application. The FBI further asserted in footnote 19 that it did not believe that Steele directly gave information to Yahoo News that was published on September 23rd news article. So as documented in the FISA renewals, the FBI seemed to believe Mr. Steele's earlier claim that he had only provided the dossier information to the FBI and Fusion GPS and not to the media. However, public reports, court filings, and information obtained by the committee during witness interviews in the course of its ongoing investigation indicate that Mr. Steele not only provided dossier information to the FBI, but also numerous media organizations prior to the end of his relationship with the FBI in 2016. In Steele's sworn court filings in litigation in London, he admitted that he gave off the recording briefings to a small number of journalists about the pre-election memoranda. In another sworn filing in that case, Mr. Steele further stated that journalists from the New York Times, the Washington Post, Yahoo News, the New Yorker, and CNN were briefed at the end of 2016 by Steele and Fusion GPS at Fusion's instructions. The filing further states that Mr. Steele subsequently participated in the further meetings at Fusion's instruction with Fusion and New York Times and the Washington Post and Yahoo News, which took place mid-October 2016. According to these court filings, the briefings involved the disclosure of limited intelligence regarding the indications of Russian interference in the U.S. election process and the possible coordination of members of Trump's campaign team and Russian government officials. I mean, it's pretty amazing when you think about all this. And then when you find out that not only did that happen, you also find out that it's broken that there was a second dossier. And the second dossier shows that the Clinton campaign officials, and actually not even Clinton campaign officials, Clinton State Department officials who had been speaking to members of the Ukraine and members of Russian government were providing information to Christopher Steele. So the State Department was helping Christopher Steele build the dossier that Clinton was paying for, that the DNC was paying for, that arguably Obama via Perkins Coie was paying for, although we haven't established that yet. But there's quite a bit of evidence to think that we can tie that knot fairly easily down the road. They were paying them directly, for all this, so that we can take this and he can leak some of it to the news and corroborate his dossier so that he can turn around and get a FISA warrant to spy on an individual within the Trump campaign that no longer is in the Trump campaign, so that it can spy on the Trump campaign. Unbelievable. And then when you get into the fact that, you know, there has to be a link that Obama is behind all of this, because it's Obama's people in charge. Some of these people even predate even George W. Bush and were in the Clinton administration. So, you know, especially when you see the news article that came out that there was an interesting set of text between the FBI official Peter Strzok and the FBI lawyer Lisa Page about Obama. An exchange about preparing talking points for then FBI Director James Comey. This is from Fox News. To give President Obama, who wanted to know everything we're doing. The message from Page to Strzok was among several thousand texts that between the lovers, you know, those ones that magically went missing recently and they found them. The pair both worked at one point for special counsel Robert Mueller's probe of alleged collusion between Russia and the Trump campaign. I mean, it's amazing to me. You have to know that Obama has to know this stuff. He had to be aware of this information. I know he knew about Hillary Clinton's server. You know, I heard that by watching the news. Yeah, that's how the president of the United States, with the most, you know, resourceful intelligence wings that float around him, he's got arms of the intelligence that he can pull from the NSA, the CIA, but he learned about it by watching the news. Yeah, this guy is tied directly to this entire thing. And if it comes out that he did this, it's going to be bigger than Watergate. Watergate is going to be the moon. This is going to eclipse it. I'm Adrian Slade. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.